From the Gettysburgian and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg, I'm Ben Ponce, and this is On Target.
I'm Gari Mangala, and today on Target, we will be talking about Student Senate reconstruction and the Cub Grand Opening.
Then we'll talk to Student Senate President Nick Arbaugh about Senate's plans for the beginning of the year and what he's looking for in the next college president. Stay with us. At long last, on Saturday of this week, we had the grand opening to the College Union Buildings Expanded Section. And it only took a month into classes, almost a month, before they were ready to actually call it open. And still, there's lots of construction happening, including, putting in those pesky things called doors that perhaps are required for a building to, be a building as opposed to a pavilion. But in any case, Gari, you attended the grand opening. Yeah, I am pretty abrasive about this particular subject today.
Or just in general.
But in any case, you attended the grand opening. What happened?
Well, when I went there from about like 6 to 9 p.m., I got dinner, and then I went and listened to—
Did they serve food?
Yeah, I just had normal bullet. And then we listened to the live band that played Three Shades of Blue. They played a lot of covers, and it was just Injunction. There weren't that many people there, but it was fun. My friends got a lot of ice cream from Half Pint. They said it was really good. And then we hung out.
No ice cream for you?
No ice cream for Gari. She wasn't feeling it. And then we hung out.
Does Gari usually refer to herself in the third person?
Apparently. We then went to the Cup Ballroom, and I laughed as my friends fell off of a bunch of inflatable games.
No inflatable games for Gari either?
Apparently not.
So you were more of an observer than a participant.
Yeah, I mean, I danced the music in my chair.
Is that really dancing?
Boogieing?
All right, I'll stop interrupting.
Yeah.
I definitely won't, but come back anyway.
But it seemed to be, like, very low-key. Every room I was in had nothing more than 20 people in it, probably less. I know kids came for ice cream, but then they would leave right after they got it. I think the fact that the Cub had already been open, and this was just us having a party for a space that's been open, I can get why people didn't come as much as maybe we thought they would.
Yeah, perhaps they would have had more people there if they'd made it host provider.
Perhaps. Wouldn't have changed my life at all, but I definitely think that, just because there's, like, it's a building that we all spend time in no matter what.
Right.
It's not like it was an actual grand opening.
I did see the fire pit was in action.
It was. There were s'mores going on and music playing all throughout Cub on the speaker. Yeah, there's definitely things happening, and the kids who are into it seem to be pretty into it.
And in this case, the fire at the Cub was an intended fire
yes.
at the Cub, as opposed
yes, it
to
was.
Those of you who may recall, last summer there was an unintended fire that occurred in that very same location, almost. It was where they were constructing the College Union building. Over on the side, some materials caught on fire, and like half the world's fire departments showed up, and, well, this time, the fire was intended.
Yeah, this time, everyone seems safe and happy, and I don't think there were any mishaps with the s'mores.
We didn't hear from our friends at the Gettysburg Fire Department, I suppose that's
all we can hope for.
Yeah. So, other than that, it seems to have been a fairly quiet week in terms of campus events and such, although I know that Student Senate is finally on its way to having a full quorum. They held elections this past week for the class of 2022 to elect its senators. And we'll talk to Senate President Nick Arbaugh later in the program about some of his plans and initiatives for Senate in the coming year. I did want to take just a moment to read the names of the class of 2022's officers, senators, and then the senators at large. So the senators at large are a new innovation in the current restructuring of the Senate Constitution. Essentially, there used to be 7 senators for each class. There are now 4 senators for each class and 7 senators at large, which are selected from among the non-winning candidates from each class, those who received the highest remaining, well, and we'll have to look into this because they were supposed to have all been those that received the highest proportion of votes from their class, but there was some talk that they might actually use the highest vote total in the aggregate. Ultimately, the senators that were chosen as senators at large, three of them came from the sophomore class and four from the first year class. So the first year class will actually have eight members in Senate. The sophomores will have seven, the juniors have four, and the seniors have four. So with that, the class of 2022's president is Andrew Adam, Vice President Lauren Dardick, Senators Courtney Chalua, Dagan Wilcox, Jarek McCuff, and Nishat Tanzim. I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly. And the senators at large are Eric Cabrera, Nadine Snyder, Garrett Goodwin. Those are all from the class of 2021. And from the class of 2022, Rock Schwartz, Giacomo Coppola. It's very similar to cupola, the symbol of Gettysburg College. I wonder if that's why they came. Probably not. You're rolling your eyes at me. In any case, Shane Carley and Lauren Dardick, who's also the vice president, will also serve as a senator. So with that, also on the docket were the chairs for the Senate committees. Those are appointed via an application process. And the Senate president, in consultation with the executive board, makes those decisions. And so the appointees chairing the Sustainability Committee, Nadine Snyder, the Student Safety Committee, Alex Jay, the Public Relations Committee, Curtis Gray, the College Life Advisory Committee, more colloquially known as CLAC, Elijah Fernandez, the IT Committee, Grace Wenzel, the Diversity Committee, Joshua Gonzalez, the Opinions Committee, Kayla Julio, the Academic Affairs Committee, Catherine Kramer, and the Career Liaison, Garrett Goodwin. Now, those are the current committees. Gary, I understand there's a process underway, an amendment, a Senate amendment to the Constitution or the bylaws on the table that would restructure those committees. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so on the table, obviously, we have a lot of committees here, and then we also add Policy Committee, which is run by Abby Hauer, the parliamentarian, and Budget BMC, Budget Management,
Budget Management Committee,
which is run by Haley Gluhanich, the treasurer. We're seeing a lot of committees. And last year, one of the issues was that all senators are supposed to sit on a committee. And even with all of these, we weren't seeing senators sitting on all of their committees. And I think part of the reason that Student Senate wants to restructure that is to make sure that senators and just students at large are being involved with this. So they want to restructure it. One thing they want to do is put together IT and PR. They also want to put together student safety and sustainability together into one committee. But as it stands right now, since they do not have quorum until tomorrow, as we are recording this on Sunday, they can't make that change, and obviously they have all of these named committees. I don't know what process they're going to go through to choose or if they're going to have the different committee chairs co-chair a new committee. But so far, it does look like they are headed towards that. They're also heading towards creating affinity group leaders to give club representatives the vote that they've been asking for years now. There are seven affinity groups, and I believe after that constitution, if it is voted, if that is amended in quorum, the week following, club reps will be voting for their affinity group leader, who will then be given a vote in budget and any other votes that happen through Senate.
Yeah, and so the affinity groups were also part of the Senate's restructured constitution last spring, and they, as you said, were kind of an endeavor to give club representatives an additional say in how Senate functions. What are the seven affinity groups?
Social, cultural, political, religious, art and music, service, and academic.
And so it's the case that clubs are assigning themselves in consultation with the Senate Executive Board to one of these seven groups, and then each group will elect an affinity group leader that will effectively have the same voting power as a senator. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I know that a lot of students have been saying, like club representatives have always been saying, we come to Senate every week so that we can you know, get funding, but we sit there and we are not allowed to be part of a lot of the decision-making process. Senate heard this, students that weren't on exec last year, but now we're on exec, we're listening to this, and obviously they're making those changes now.
Right, and so speaking of Senate club representatives attending Senate every week, I understand that's been a bit of an issue so far.
Absolutely. First week, right now we're also hearing of senators that forgot that Senate start was on Mondays at 7, and now they're having to restructure that a little bit. But last week, I believe Marissa Wallanda said that we had 2/3 attendance of club reps. Students aren't coming, and obviously they're really pushing attendance. I believe 3 absences from Senate unexcused can lead to fiscal probation and also being derecognized.
Right.
And as we're seeing that, you know, the lack of representation of club reps may be adding to that. So hopefully the affinity group leaders will help bring attendance back up to where Senate wants it to be.
Yeah, and I mean, from a kind of an outside perspective, it's a little bit problematic that these club representatives are saying that they don't feel like they're adequately heard on Senate, and then, you know, 1/3 of them don't show up.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There's definitely room to call it hypocrisy in there. However, there are definitely club reps, me being one of them, that come to Senate every week and are interested in what's going on and want to be part of the process, even though may not want to be a senator per se, but do want to be involved in what's going on in our college. And for those students, I think that the affinity group leader system will definitely be impactful and also be helpful in making sure that, you know, students are being heard. I know last year, one thing that was talked about a lot was that a lot of senators you're going to see are poli-sci or econ majors. And hopefully with this, we're getting also diversity in what students are interested in, you know, students that maybe are English majors or, music majors, being able to have a vote and a say in budget and in constitutions and in anything else that may come up in Senate this year.
Right. And I do think, obviously, there's kind of a natural curricular to co-curricular consistency, I guess you could say, when folks from the social sciences, particularly political science, are running for Senate. And I
Absolutely.
Do think, and one of the things that once the full Senate is seated, we'll start to dig in a little bit to the composition of that group in a variety of ways, but I imagine that what we'll see is that even in light of all of these innovations, that political science is the most heavily represented major in the body. And you know, it's one of the largest majors on campus, so it's not surprising, but regardless, I think that Senate would certainly do well to consider how can better engage the whole of the campus community. And I know that's something that Nick Arbaugh thinks a lot about, and we'll chat with him about that later in the program. One other item coming up next weekend is homecoming. So I know that the news section of the Gettysburgian will be all over this particular story. What are some of the highlights of events that are on the docket?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is going to be, centered around networking between current students and alumni. You're seeing networking happening for study abroad, and it's also a lot of reunions. You're also seeing a lot of majors coming together to talk about, you know, what's going on in the field and also just getting to know each other. A lot of eating. It looks like there's going to be a lot of opportunities to eat this weekend at homecoming, a lot of sports games. You're seeing baseball, lacrosse. You can go on a bike ride with Professor Brandauer and Foster, if that's something you're into.
Who's leading that?
Professors Brandauer and Gavin Foster.
Isn't that interesting? You know, what a uniquely Gettysburg homecoming event. I know that one thing that is not on the official homecoming calendar that will also be happening next weekend is the conclusion to the campaign, the Gettysburg Great Campaign.
There is at 6 o'clock on, I believe, the 22nd, so the Saturday, There's a campaign celebration happening on Memorial Field, but it's invite only.
Yeah, it's invite only for those people who donated to the campaign. I know that I've been invited, not because I donated to the campaign, but along with members of the Gettysburg College Wind Symphony and College Choir will be performing at the event, a program headlined by a combined performance of Aaron Copland's The Promise of Living. Just a fun fact there. But in any case, yes, it will be a large event. There's a tent being constructed as we speak on Memorial Field. Right now, there are large metal beams on top of the field. This tent, interestingly enough, has a glass roof, it has a floor, and it has air conditioning. So this really seems to be more of a temporary building than a tent. I think tent understates what we've paid for here.
Yeah.
But I would be intrigued to know what the price tag on that particular tent is, although I imagine that's a deep, dark secret. And since, you know, they've raised $150 million, more than $150 million, and they'll announce the final number at the campaign, which is, why we don't know exactly, but we do know that it is more than the goal, which was $150 million over the past 8 years, the past 4 years of which have been part of the public phase of the campaign. One other note on that front is that Bob Callen, the vice president for development, alumni, and parent relations, who has spearheaded this campaign in large part, is retiring after the campaign ends, which it's now over, and his last day at the college is on Friday, October the 5th. And so Bob Callen, who, is certainly been an institution on campus in terms of fundraising for many years, will be wrapping up his tenure. President Riggs said at the first faculty meeting of the year that the glamorous lifestyle of taking red eyes across the country is so glamorous that he's decided to retire. And so Bob Callen wraps up his tenure at the college, and they'll launch a search for a new director of that program area, which really is focused on the long-term financial sustainability of the college in many respects, in addition to alumni relations, which I think if we're looking at homecoming in an honest way, that you'll note that it's an opportunity to show alumni what's happening and encourage them to write checks to their alma mater. So with that, that's going to wrap up our news segment. We'll be back with the Bullet Report and then Student Senate President Nick Arbaugh. Now it's time for the Bullet Report. It's been another exciting week in Gettysburg College sports action. On September the 9th, the men's soccer team tied Rutgers Newark 0-0, as they say, or 0-0, as people say. The golf team finished first of 13 at the Dickinson Fall Invitational. The women's soccer team defeated York 1-0. The field hockey team defeated Alvernia 1-0. The volleyball team beat Frostburg State 3-2. The women's golf team finished 3-3 at the Gettysburg Tri-Match. The men's soccer team beat Washington 1-0. The women's soccer team lost to Washington 3-2. The men's golf team finished 6-14 at the Carnegie Mellon Fall Shootout. The men's cross country team finished 8-11 at the Kutztown Division II Division III Challenge. The women's cross country team finished 7-10. The women's tennis team defeated Messiah 63. The men's tennis team defeated Messiah 9-0. The volleyball team defeated Washington 3-1. The field hockey team defeated Washington 2-1. And the football team lost to Dickinson 30-7 in the battle for the little brown jug. Thus endeth the Bullet Report.
And we'll be right back with Student Senate President Nick Arbaugh.
Joined today by Nick Arbaugh, the president of the Gettysburg College Student Senate. Nick, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
So why don't we start with just sort of a general overview of where the Gettysburg College Student Senate is heading into this academic year? I know you've now met twice. with another meeting. And hopefully by the next meeting, you will have a full quorum of first-year senators and you can start, you know, allocating money and things like that.
Yeah, hopefully we can actually start doing stuff. By the next meeting, we should have a full quorum of first-year senators. We got tremendous turnout from the first-year class in regards to people running for not just Senate, but class officer positions and the like. It seems to have been a very good campaign. And so we're really looking forward to being able to actually get down to business, allocate the money, you know, have that power of the purse that we do enjoy having.
Yeah. And so as you kind of think about in broad strokes, what might be on the agenda this year, what kind of comes to the top of the list? I know last year, one of the major agenda items was an unplanned maintenance response issue in light of the mold situation that evolved in Hanson. And that wasn't something you planned for. But are you planning to dig into anything in particular so far this year?
Yeah, so I think you make an important point in that a lot of what at least ends up getting publicized. A lot of what we end up, you know, the big ticket items that we end up tackling each year tend to be more in a reactive stance than a proactive stance. And, you know, obviously we'd rather get out ahead of stuff, but Senate doesn't have the capability to go around detecting mold. All we can do is, you know, all we have to work with is what students give us and what they tell us especially. But other than that, we do have a couple things that we're hoping to do this year. We're hoping to continue to press student free speech concerns. We're hoping to continue to press student living concerns, which I've already had a couple students come up to me about, whether that be mold or just, you know, one group of students had a hole in the wall of their theme house. So obviously that's not acceptable and, you know, they weren't getting the results that they should have been. So we're going to continue working on that sort of thing. We're looking to kind of restructure our committees, and I won't go into too much detail about that, but I think it's going to be, because it's not all finalized yet, but I think it's going to be in a way that really incentivizes people to get involved, be active, have the self-agency that you kind of need in student government. Beyond that, it does look like there are going to be some discussions about Greek life that come up to the table.
Just what kind of discussions?
You know, there's obviously been some, as you know, Gettysburgian editorials. I don't know if you read it, but you know, I tend...
From time to time, I do check in with that publication that I edit.
Yeah. When I'm on the toilet, I'll grab a copy or two, you know, for one reason or another. But... So obviously there have been some editorials talking about kind of questioning, you know, they're questioning the value that Greek life brings, if it brings any at all. The one, I think, called for its abolition in, you know, no soft-spoken way. Is that correct?
Yeah, but, Liam Kerr did suggest, and we talked about this a little bit on last week's podcast, that it's a net negative that creates a patriarchal structure in which... sexual assault and other issues run rampant, and that his solution was that the college should cut the cord.
Yeah, you know, and I think he is echoing concerns and beliefs that have been raised in the past and that have are going to continue to be raised by students that feel left out, I think.
So what do you think Senate's role is in this conversation? I mean, is it going to be something in the opinions committee where you're kind of drafting non-binding opinions on, you know, where the will of the Senate is? Or is there some more policy-based action that you think Senate could potentially pursue?
Well, I mean, it's a tricky question. So obviously opinions could be an avenue for students to share their opinion about that, and, you know, then the Senate would have to consider whether it adopted or declined to adopt that resolution that came out of the committee. But I think there's been, at least on our side, there's been a big administrative push to get us to work closer with IFC, with Panhell, kind of bring together the two activist communities, you know, in Senate and Greek life that play a very major role on this campus. And so I think in that kind of coming together, you'll see possibly an avenue for those discussions and stuff like that. I mean, it very well may be that a student gets up at student concerns at the end of Senate and says, I hate Greek life, it should be ended now, do something about it. Mm-hmm. In which case, you know, I would think it would probably go to Senate opinions. And, you know, I somewhat doubt that that opinion would be taken up, but that could be an avenue for it. But I think that there's a institutional dialogue between the movers and shakers that be on, you know, are these perceptions correct that people have? Are they wrong to feel left out? Mm-hmm. Are they wrong to worry that this is enforces a kind of male-dominated structure of campus society?
Yeah, is that something that you could envision, you know, appointing I know the Senate has the power to form ad hoc committees. Is that something that you could see an ad hoc committee being formed to address? Or do you imagine that'll stay within the general existing confines of the Senate structure?
Yeah, so I tend to shy away from the ad hoc committee approach, just because, you know, if you start appointing a committee for anything, you get this alphabet soup, and, you know, we already have enough acronyms to kind of contend with. I would think that any kind of discussion about that, which would have to, of course, involve Greeks and non-Greeks, people who love every bit of the system, people who despise every ounce of the system, I would think that such a discussion could easily take place in Senate opinions. If people didn't want that, then I would be happy to work with my execs and work with Senate to moderate kind of a discussion on this. I mean, the bottom line is that Senate can't unilaterally end Greek life even if it wanted to, and I don't think that it wants to. But that doesn't kind of – that lack of power to simply strike it out of the books in an instant doesn't detract from the power that conversation can have in having positive change in maybe the actions, or maybe it's just the perceptions of people on the campus.
Right. And one thing you just brought up that kind of segues into another point relating to Greek life, you mentioned that it's important to include the voices of Greeks and non-Greeks. And one issue that I know has been at the forefront of many minds, and perhaps your own with respect to Senate, is that issue of diversity and inclusion. And so I just wanted to see if you could talk a little bit about some of the efforts that you've made in that regard, particularly in terms of how you're appointing senators when vacancies arise, and, you know, what your overall vision for a Senate that is reflective of the broader campus community is.
Yeah, I mean, so the goal is obviously to include as many perspectives as a representative body as we can. And, you know, while that might not be maybe inherently, I mean, obviously we only have 30 or so senators. We're not going to see every single student's perspective through those 30 senators as much as we might want to. And so, obviously anybody can come to Senate and share their perspective on stuff like that. But in terms of our efforts, you know, I think we just appointed Joshua Gonzalez, who's a sophomore, to chair the diversity committee. I think he's going to do an excellent job. He approached me about it way before I put anything out. He showed a lot of agency in going after the role. I think he's going to bring a lot of new ideas to the table, and I think a new energy to the table where we haven't really seen a whole lot out of that committee, at least since I've been here. I think we could see that changing for the better. And as to kind of our method in and my method in deciding appointments or whatever selections that I've made, I won't lie to you. I go for who I think is going to be the best candidate for Senate. And that's not to say that I'm not thinking about diversity and inclusion, because I am. I mean, as I said earlier, we want to try to have as representative of a body as possible, with the knowledge that obviously somebody's going to get left out here or there. But we've really sought to kind of take a look at our candidates and say, okay, do we have someone from STEM? Do we have someone from the political left, from the political right? Do we have someone from the political center? Do we have non-Greeks? Do we have Greeks? Do we have someone from minority communities or you know, religious communities and stuff like that, who are able to attest to the needs of their communities and constituents in ways that we wouldn't otherwise know about. So I think we're making tremendous strides in terms of being that representative activist body that we always are trying to be.
And when you just kind of talked briefly there about what factors are you considering when you think about who is the most qualified choice? You mentioned that you want to appoint the best candidate. And so what considerations are in play? Because I know that already you've had several vacancies to fill. And as the year goes on, as Senate Executive Board and Senate President, you will likely have more vacancies to fill.
Yeah, you know, it's a shame when we lose anyone, but, you know, obviously we understand when people have other commitments and, you know, it's up to them to prioritize things. We're not going to do that for them. So I have had quite a few appointments to make. I think it's in the range of 6 to 8 at this point, not including committees. You know, when I put out a general call for applicants, I asked for a cover letter and a resume. And with the cover letter, I try and look at, okay, are they telling me something that they think I'm going just to like? Are they just telling me what I want to hear? Or are they telling me something new? Are they telling me ways in which they would dynamically change or add to the conversation that we've been having on any number of issues? Are they coming from a background of demonstrating high levels of self-agency, of high levels of leadership, of high levels of communication skills? Are they going to be reliable? And then I look to their resume after that, and I mean, obviously I'm looking for those same things, but with the resume, is this someone who is going to class? You know, is this someone, and I don't mean to detract from people who, you know, maybe not, they don't have a 4.0 GPA, so they're out, but I place a primacy on someone who is a go-getter for Senate, and I think that that is an extremely important thing, because Senate will emulate what its senators put into it. And if its senators are go-getters, Senate's going to be a go-getter. So I'm looking, when I'm looking through resumes and I'm looking through cover letters, I want someone who has demonstrated a commitment to Senate, maybe when they didn't need to, someone who we're not going to have to train. We're not going to, and in that sense, I mean, catch them up to speed with everything they're, you know, that we're doing. And basically, and it's through no fault of their own. And I mean, I imagine the first years will be just as I was when I was a senator my first year, and that you don't know what the acronyms mean. You don't know how business is conducted. It takes getting used to. And if we can get a senator or an appointment in general of someone who doesn't need that 3 or 4 week adjustment period, who can get right into the conversation because they've already been part of the conversation, that is, I think, a tremendous benefit, not only to the candidates when I'm selecting them, but to Senate overall.
Right. Switching gears a little bit, I know that last week when he was on campus, you spoke with Charlie Scott, who we had on this podcast last week, who's chairing the search for Gettysburg College's 15th president. And I know that you attended a dinner along with other student leaders on campus. And I was wondering if you could shed some light on where, first of all, what sorts of voices were represented in that group, and more broadly, where that conversation went, what you're hearing in your conversations, both that and in other areas on campus, about what folks are looking for from your perspective in the next president of the college, replacing Janet Morgan Riggs after 11 years, it will be next spring.
Yeah, so I met with Charlie Scott along with a gaggle of other kind of student leaders and stuff like that. And he's, I think, tremendously equipped, tremendously attentive, conversational, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but a nice guy who I have tremendous faith in and able to kind of lead this committee, to select this president, to lead this search. At the meeting, you know, I was joined by, I'd say 10 to 15, I can't remember quite exactly how many it was. It was about 10 to 15 other student leaders representing a variety of organizations on campus. I noted kind of that political clubs, which are usually very active on the campus, besides the one that I represent, weren't really represented too well there. And I don't think it's because they weren't invited. So I would have liked to see more political clubs. There was kind of cultural clubs there represented very well. They had tons of excellent stuff to say. Senate was represented. The sophomore class president, I believe, was there. CAB was represented. You know, we had plenty of people from Res Life. We had a couple of, I'd say Greek Life was probably underrepresented than, you know, obviously it's a very big thing on the campus. I don't think that was borne out by the numbers there. But that being said, the discussion, I don't think, could have gone any better. We really talked through a lot of issues that were hard. You know, it's not easy to discuss everything, but especially in a setting where we don't know this guy. He's not like it's a professor that we're going to after class. I mean, we had just met him. At least I had just met him. And I think his ability to get us to get to these harder issues.
What were some of those issues?
So a lot of it revolved around and I think this goes back to I don't think Greek Life was as represented. A lot of it revolved around how students who were not in Greek Life felt, maybe not towards Greek Life necessarily, although that was part of the conversation, but felt in general. The conversation really revolved around, it seemed, at least to me, it revolved around people who did not have these Greek social organizations, you know, to kind of fall back on. I mean, there was a lot of talk about students' anxiety. There's a lot of talk about, you know, the pressures of school. I know I brought up the financial pressures that a lot of students have felt and that I've had students express to me, you know, as we look at tuition increases and obviously the cost of education across the United States and among our peer institutions is increasing. You know, that's putting a lot of hurt on a lot of people. And so I wanted to make sure that I stressed the dangers of continuing to apply that kind of pressure to students, or at least the perceptions that those students have of pressure, because, and I think this is borne out by the whole discussion, regardless of what surveys say, there's a significant number of students, at least in my experience and the experiences of people there, that are uncomfortable. And that comes from a variety of sources, but they're uncomfortable. They liked JMR. I think I haven't met someone who really didn't like JMR. And they're worried now that she's leaving. She had a very steady hand on the job. Obviously, she had been there for 11 years, which I think is above the average of most presidents.
And even before that, she's been at Gettysburg College in some form or another since 1973, when she was a student here, with the exception of the few years she was at grad school. She immediately came back to the faculty, and so she's been here for a little while.
Man, she's nuts. But I mean, this is what I'm talking about, you know, that she lived and breathed Gettysburg. She knew when the students were unhappy and why they were unhappy, and she was willing to listen to them when she didn't. And it is so easy in that role as president to be this kind of shadowy fundraiser who really doesn't spend all that much time here, who doesn't really get it here, and leave everyone to their own devices. And I think there was a lot of anxiety expressed about, you know, if they were looking at candidates that would end up taking up that kind of mantle if they were president.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's an interesting point that you raised there. And it kind of comes back to something you talked about earlier, the importance of students having, you've used the term agency several times, to, you know, assert what it is that they want to have happen and have the wherewithal to sort of begin to effectuate that change. To that point, I noted that last week when there was a open forum that Charlie Scott held, only three students showed up, and, you know, not to toot the horn of the Gettysburgian, it was the Gettysburgian's reporter and two of her friends, and no one else showed up.
I heard it was GNN.
In fact, it was not. But in any case, you know, three students showed up, and they were there on behalf of the Geddes Virgin in large part. And so what do you think it says? I mean, I know that the committee has said that it's received, I think, 2,500 comments. And I don't know what proportion of those are from students. I don't think that number has been released. But do you think that students are sufficiently engaged with this presidential search? And if not, are you concerned that, you know, the priorities of other constituencies will be taken more seriously if students aren't actively articulating what it is they want in the next president?
Well, I mean, listen, it's a pretty obvious rule of life that people can't attend to your concerns if you don't talk to them about it. I mean, that's a, you know, kind of bedrock of communication. And having the Geddes Virgin reporter and her, was it two friends, I think you said, you know, having three people show up to something like that, I would have gone had the dinner with him not been immediately prior to that. And I felt I talked his ear off plenty, as I have a tendency to do.
No, not you.
thank you, Ben. You know, I'm not going to say I understand it from the stakeholders on the campus who I know have a lot to say and who I know have opinions on this. Maybe they felt that the electronic survey was enough to get their point across. Well, you know, good for you. You're one among 2,500. I hope they pay special attention to yours. But you can't complain. I mean, look, let me preface that by saying the candidate that they pick, I have absolutely no doubt, will leave some people more happy than others. And I think that is just, you know, an obvious truth when you're selecting any candidate. But if you didn't engage and you didn't care, then, I mean, if you didn't care before, why should you care after? If you've all you've indicated is apathy, then great, you don't care. They're going to pick who they think is the best for the job. I have full and utter faith that they're well-intentioned. They're going to pick who they think is the best for the job. But you didn't contribute, so it's not going to reflect you.
Right. And kind of on a similar vein, I know that one challenge that Senate has faced thus far in its first two meetings is rather scant attendance by club representatives. And, you know, club representatives, clubs have to be represented in Senate in order to maintain recognition, which tends to be a prerequisite for receiving funding for events. That's not the only reason that a club should be recognized by Senate, but certainly that's the one that I think touches students the most if they're not able to get Senate funding for their events. I just am wondering if you think that kind of going along with the club representative attendance issue and, you know, the poor attendance at the student forum is indicative of a broader lack of engagement on campus, a broader issue of apathy to which we ought to be paying attention, or if there are other factors that are preventing students from feeling comfortable in participating in forums and in Senate meetings. And I'm just wondering whether if there's this broad swath of the campus community that's not showing up to be counted in some respects, how that affects what Student Senate can do, and more broadly, what the college can do in terms of providing the type of student experience that, you know, they would like to.
Yeah, so, I mean, you touched on it, that clubs not being recognized. I mean, obviously, we've had some pretty poor attendance, and I've shared my thoughts on them in the videos of Senate that the Geddes Virgin has shared on Facebook. You share them on Facebook.
The Geddes Virgin is Facebook live streaming all Senate meetings this year. So even if you can't go, you can always follow up.
So, yeah, I had some pretty broad comments at Senate about it, and I'll shorten them here. But another thing to consider, too, is we're moving into this affinity leader program. And the whole point of it was we had this realization that senators might not be representative of every stakeholder. So we need to come up with a system that represents clubs' interests. And if you're a club and you want your interests represented, I mean, it's similar to the presidential search. You need to show up. You need to be part of the conversation if you want to be part of the solution. And so not only are they missing out on funding, maybe, but they're also missing out on a chance to become, you know, a voting member of Senate in an affinity group as an affinity leader. I will say that it is not the majority of clubs. I mean, the majority of clubs have been in attendance at Senate, at least the last meeting. The first meeting, I'm not sure what the numbers are. I still think it's a majority, but a majority of clubs, which I would say represents a majority of students, are not in danger of derecognition right now. But it's a significant number that are. And, you know, it's unconscionable to me to not have this all set up and ready to go. I know it's the beginning of the year. I know, you know, a lot's moving and stuff like that. People might have a lot in their lives, but these are the rules, and everybody else could make it. So, you know, I won't get up on my soapbox much more, but I will say that the policy of the Student Senate Executive Board that we have gone through is that we are not considering clemency for any kind of attendance issues and stuff like that. We are going to hold firm, and I know very well that we're going to get probably a good amount of crocodile tears and people coming and saying, well, I had X, I had Y. You know, I understand that. I have X and Y too. But if I have X and Y and it conflicts with Z, I make sure somebody gets to Z. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody's got to go. All they have to do is say here. They don't need to get up and give some great oration in the Senate Agora, but they do need to have someone there to represent you. And if this club is truly going to be a club, they need to be able to do that.
All right, well, I think we're going to have to leave it there. Senate President Nick Arbaugh, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank Nick Arbaugh for being our featured guest today.
We would also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian and the executive board of WZBT for their ongoing support of this project. Please be sure to subscribe to On Target on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha, a senior music major focusing on composition in the Sunderman Conservatory of Music. Be sure to join us next week. I don't know who we're going to interview, but I'm sure it'll be someone great. Have a great week.